Welcome, Leary and Graham, to the newsreel with a bright, sunshiny morning with the news that Zach Polanski has ascended to the throne of the Green Party, who you know quite well, Leary.
I do indeed. Since 2021, so for the last four and odd bit years, when he was elected as a London Assembly member, he has either been the chair of the Environment Committee, or I have, and then I've been his deputy, or he's been mine. Actually, this year, bizarrely, one of the Tories has just become my deputy, and we went on a site visit, and Zach introduced himself and then confidently said, because I didn't introduce myself as the chair, and he said, "I'm the deputy chair." I said, "Actually, you're not. It's Tom Tyrrell." And he looks a bit crestfallen. However, I don't think he's going to be bothered about being the chair or the deputy chair of the Environment Committee. Now he's the national leader of the Green Party.
Well, being sat next to you or directly opposite you is a highly prized accolade. I've also shared that honour on occasion.
I'm not sure it's an accolade that he's going to be that bothered about anymore, though.
I'm not so sure. But has it? Presumably, it will serve him well in his new office. What's your impression of the man? I gather that what we're seeing is a sort of, not exactly a stage name, but a political name. It's David Paulden, originally actor and hypnotherapist, amongst other things.
Yes, and the hypnotherapy. He had a bit of a sting done on him back in 2013 or something.
So I was just reading, yeah.
Yes. So when he arrived on the Assembly, there was quite a lot of kerfuffle amongst all the Labour group has had a lot of women in it, actually. When he arrived in 2021, I think there were seven women out of the 11 of us, and we all kept saying, "Don't look in his eyes, don't look in his eyes." And unless you do want to go a couple of cup sizes larger. Because of this, but the most weird thing about this story about a Sun journalist saying, "Can you hypnotize me to make my boobs bigger?" is that apparently, and I've only read this in the recent stories because it's obviously all that stuff has resurfaced now he's become the Green leader. Apparently, the journalist is saying that her boobs did get bigger for about 10 days, and apparently. You can be hypnotised to make your boobs grow, but it doesn't last.
Does this mean the Sun is going to back him all the way? You know, the soar away Sun. But you would have thought anybody coming up with a request for that has Sun reporter written all over them, so to speak. I mean, very decorously, I'm sure. But anyway.
I mean, it's such a bizarre thing to ask a hypnotherapist to do. But
just a tad, if you're not in California or something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, who knows? But I'm assuming that he didn't hypnotise 85% of Green Party members to vote for him. I mean, that's a pretty stonking victory over the other two. The Greens have this weird system where if you have a co-leader, then which they often do, then they have a single deputy. And Zach became the deputy leader 2 years ago. And now that he is the lone leader, there is now a co-deputy. So there are two other people who've just been elected to be the co or joint deputy leader.
Like a John Paul Weston, isn't it? Yeah.
So they've gone from having a joint leader with a single deputy to having a single leader with a joint deputy. So there's always three of them. It's always a triumvirate. But being a single leader, you know, obviously puts quite a lot of pressure on you. And then, of course, this whole issue that they got these four MPs elected. One of them was in the seat that Caroline... Well, of course, that's the other thing, is that the MP in Brighton... Pavilion, I think it is. Sorry, there's Brighton Kemp Town, which I think is Labour, and Brighton Pavilion, which is the Green MP. Of course, the person who's replaced Caroline Lucas down there is Sian Berry, who until July 2024 was also a London Assembly member. I was an Assembly member elected at the same time with Sian in 2016. So I also know Sian quite well. So they kept that Brighton seat. Then they took these two rural seats, which Ellie Chowns is in Herefordshire somewhere. I can't remember the precise name of the seat. And Adrian Ramsay is somewhere in East Anglia. And of course, it then turned out that although he's a Green Party politician, he's very against pylons, bringing renewable energy from the wind turbines in the sea off the coast of East Anglia, which everyone thought was a very NIMBY thing for a Green Party politician to be going on about. But he's also in a rural seat over there. And then the other seat that they, which they took off the Tories, and the other seat which they took off Labour, was one of the seats in Bristol. So, and that's Carla Denyer. So when they arrived in Parliament, Carla Denyer was the co-leader with Adrian Ramsay, and then she announced that she wanted to step down. So Adrian Ramsay was trying to hang on to the leadership, staying as the leader with a new co-leader candidate, which was Ellie Chowns. So Zach has defeated two of the MPs, which is pretty amazing as well. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting period in Green Party politics.
Well, some things aside, it sounds as if they've got their ducks in a row now. Graham, are you, good morning. Are you impressed by what you've heard and made of Zach so far?
Good morning. Yeah, well, he's very impressive, very good in communication, but he's a threat to the Labour Party. Yeah, so I don't think they're going to be too happy about it.
There seems to be a sort of putative Grimston's fifth law here that mean promise the moon on a stick in terms of a green revolution, and then it all fades away. When the stark economics of the moment, as opposed to long term planning, begins to kick in. I mean, that's a sort of a guesstimate on my part, this does leave, or has left, I would have thought, a wide open space for someone to challenge the hegemony, and this is, I suppose, about to be happening.
Well, I think everything has to be considered in the context of the war in Ukraine and Russia's campaign against Britain. Like the Andrew Rayner thing has to be seen in terms of Russian espionage. I mean, they've gone against Starmer, and now they're going against Andrew Rayner to get to Starmer. I mean, I think it's now in a court, a semi-court, but and then Starmer will have to make a decision, and then it will come into sort of court of public opinion.
I mean, there are those who would say that Ray's been the principal threat to Starmer. I mean, notwithstanding Wes Streeting, but yeah. So basically, your implication there, Graham, sorry to cut across you there, is that the first item on Zach's agenda is going to be fending off the Ruskies.
Well, Putin is, that's what he's about in Europe, is manipulating all the political parties in Europe, and mainly through the far right, but not always through the far right. I mean, he's perfectly capable of using the telegraph.
And there's
Remember that.
Zach saying he wants to learn from Farage in for heavy quotes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's the journalist laying it on him that he's a green Farage. I mean, Farage has just spoken against the UK in America. So he's consorting with a supporter of Putin in the President of the United States, speaking against his country. So
Yes.
he's working for Putin as well. I mean,
And of course, he's now bedecked with the mighty intellectual force that is Nadine Dorries.
sorry.
Yeah, well, that was not unexpected at all. She's the first candidate for the Reform Party, I would have thought.
Indeed, yeah.
So it's all Brexit fallout, which again is a Putin plot. I mean, it has to be seen as propaganda from Russia. And the main idea of this coalition that Xi Jinping has put together is to split the West. And they're succeeding. And the Telegraph has to be taken to court rather than Angela Rayner.
Or for exposing the story in the way in which they did it, you mean?
Well, the Daily
Yeah.
Mail was
Well, yes.
for Hitler, so the Telegraph is being, I mean, whether it's knowingly or not, but they're working for the other side. I mean, if that's what the reason why
Well, Hitler,
Putin.
as he was then thought to be, I mean, we can't accuse them of being Nazis, but at the same time, historically, it was thought that a drastic change was needed in deeply recessionary Britain, wasn't it, in the 30s?
Yeah, like Lord Londonderry, he thought he could negotiate with Hitler, like Trump. But they don't understand the propaganda method. I mean, someone made a very good remark the other day that the extreme right don't have an ideology; they have a method, and their method is to undermine the opposition and undermine the other side. So, and that's what Putin's
Compromise
doing
and so forth.
by lying. And as
Well,
Lord Denton said in the call, that if you're dealing with cases of fraud, for example, the whole thing falls apart when people start lying. And this is what Putin is relying on. All you have to do is put suspicion in and smear campaigns, and that puts Starmer in a very difficult position because it's a trap for him. If he sacks her, then the Telegraph will then say, there you are, he can't make a good judgment. So they can attack Starmer.
Well, I don't know that it would necessarily work out quite like that because she
The
is
public opinion.
no, she's elected her in her own right, along with Starmer. She's not in an appointed. Well, she's in an appointed position in the sense that the deputy leader of the Labour Party, I guess, doesn't necessarily have to be the deputy prime minister, although obviously John Prescott was the deputy leader of the Labour Party and then was also the deputy prime minister. But it's an elected position within the Labour Party. So what he could do is leave her as the deputy prime minister because she is the deputy leader of the party, because unless she resigns from that, she will remain in that role because she was elected to it. But he could take the housing brief off her because her error of judgment relates to partly to her brief because it's around a housing matter. I mean, I have to say it is relatively complicated, her situation, I think. And I think it does sound as though she has made a genuine mistake. If her name is no longer on the title deeds of the other property, then you would have thought that purchasing a flat somewhere else then becomes, her primary home, her first home, not a second home on which you need to pay more stamp duty. I think the bit that where I think the Telegraph is, I'm not sure this is correct. They've been saying that she deliberately took her name off the title deeds of the house in Ashton-under-Lyme, the family home. But my understanding is that she took her name off the title deeds so that it could go into this trust for her son, and that was an arrangement, presumably, that tax lawyers advised her and her now ex-husband to arrange.
Not
So,
unusual among Telegraph readers, I would have thought.
well, I've got no idea how usual or unusual this kind of thing is. Their original allegation was that she'd basically flipped, that she'd taken her name off the deeds just so that she could get out of paying the extra tax. And I don't know the exact timing of when her name came off the title deeds. I mean, if it was immediately before she concluded the purchase in Hove of this, I have to say, sounds quite expensive.
People will say Bryn Hove.
£800,000 flat. Good Lord, I thought you'd get a whole house in Hove for £800,000. Blimey. I must have a
It's
word
on
with
the seafront, though. It's on the seafront.
I must have a word with my sister, actually. She's got a house in Hove. Maybe her house is worth more than I thought. Yeah, I'm sure it's one of those very, very lovely Regency seafront flats that are ludicrously expensive, I'm sure. But Angela should have been, if it is sort of like an immediate, she changed one thing on the title deeds there and then bought the flat in Hove. That doesn't look good, even if, the wider reasons why she did it were to protect the interests of her son. If she did it some time ago and then bought the flat in Hove, then I think that's, more acceptable. But that is the original allegation from the Telegraph, is that she flipped and moved, which one was her primary home. And that was one of the things that MPs were accused of doing during the
I was going to
expenses
say, there's a
scandal.
great deal of that going on, wasn't there?
Yeah,
Yes, yeah.
there was. And they said, oh, yeah. And Margaret Moran, who is the MP in Luton, claimed that her primary home was somewhere in Southampton, and all this sort of thing. And she was one of the worst. And because then they could, then the, and the reason they were flipping the homes then was because then they could reclaim money from the taxpayer to, they could buy a rundown property in Southampton and then turn it into a palace. And then the taxpayer paid for all the repairs. So that was why they were doing it then. So I can't tell at this point, how stupid she's been, or whether it was ignorance, stupidity, or whether it was sort of willful and deliberate. Just can't tell.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's a fertile ground for propaganda, because it's, as Donald Rumsfeld said, it's an unknown unknown.
Yeah.
So you can put in whatever you like, and that's what Putin does, of course, to undermine the government,
It's
and that's
curious.
the
Yeah.
context. The context of the whole thing should be judged, which will be down to Starmer to judge finally whether he's going to sack her from housing.
I wonder if
It's
there's. Sorry, you were saying.
well, it's that's why it's such a delicate, because there's certain things that he can't say without going against the court of public opinion. So, he and his lawyer training may go against him in the sense that he feels he has to follow the letter of the law, rather than the equity of the law. In order to get public support. But I think he won't get some public support. I think he'll get far more public support if he goes against the Telegraph rather than Angela Rayner, because it's clearly a made-up story, exaggerated story, to get at Angela Rayner. I mean, they've shown no interest in examining this kind of issue with Elon Musk, for instance.
It would be nice to see a show of unity, wouldn't it? And it's curious, isn't it? I also wonder if there's a psychological element here in the preparation of people for high office, in that it's probably as well to get your 5-year, 10-year logistical plan together to sort of avoid these banana skins, as we kind of used to say back in the day, where the tabloids can go after you. The mundanities of life that I suppose are obscured by the razzmatazz of hustings and the immediate entree when you assume office, and indeed the daily attention of the press on other matters like your legs, in the case of Angela Rayner, for quite some time. But there's is it the case that these things can get neglected when you suddenly you go into turbo mode and sort of a major post is awaiting you.
Well,
I'm thinking of Zach Polanski here as well, whether he's had a chance to get things in
exactly.
order.
Yeah, well, all politicians are in the same danger of something being. I mean, every lawyer knows.
Achilles heel,
Every lawyer knows. I mean, there's a phrase in law, cherche la femme. So
Yes,
anything
and elsewhere.
a sexual smear or. So they're only going on the. They're trying to guess what Angela.
What can we get on this person? He's, yes, it's the old
What was
tabloid refrain, isn't it?
the mens rea? What was her intent? Well, of course, nobody knows what her intent is. It's her credibility, and it's the credibility that Starmer should support against the Telegraph, because the Telegraph doesn't know either. And so it's just trying to smear her,
It
basically.
sources would appear to indicate it's that sort of language, isn't it? And if you
Came
know,
up.
then you join the dots, gentle reader.
Was it a different case that came up a year ago, supported by the main funder of the Tory Party? Who's the main funder of the Tory Party?
I'm trying to remember now. My first thought was Paul Marshall and GB News. I mean, he's not short of a bob or two, but there are several sort of big hitters now. You mean
Yeah,
in the
but I mean,
press? Yeah.
they've tried it before, in
Well,
other
it would have
words,
been
but they.
Murdoch, wouldn't it? I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the press just sort of goes for, and once they smell blood, they'll just keep going for a sacking of some kind. But in the
And a
context
show
of
of disunity. Yeah.
the defense of Ukraine, it should be as a traitor, really, like Farage, speaking against the government in a foreign country.
He's got this unique position, hasn't he? I mean, I think one of the get-outs for Farage is that his party is not a party, but it's a company, if I remember rightly. And I'm not quite sure how that is sanctioned under the Electoral Commission, but it is.
Yeah, but it should be a suspect piece of evidence.
It's to do with being a renegade, basically. It's an outlier, somebody who's disconnected from the conventional political machinery. But I dare say, I mean, there's been no serious investigative work on Nigel Farage's arrangements, has there? I think there were, points made about his financial irregularities while an MEP.
Yeah. Well, surely they can find something on Farage.
Well, I think in the interest of editorial balance, the Telegraph should be having at least a cursory poke around.
Yeah, and I think this is in terms of the judgment of the Court of Public Opinion, as distinguished from the legal situation in a real, it's the public opinion that is being manipulated. Not the court. They're just simply using the legal situation as an instrument in the public opinion.
And that good old trope, they're all in it for themselves, isn't it? It comes to mind, yeah.
Well, no, the suspect is they're in it for the extreme right.
Leone.
Yeah,
Did you want to come back on that?
I just think that I have to say I do think she's been silly. In terms of, I mean, I gather there was also a gagging order, but there's been a lot of Labour politicians who've gone out and defended her and said she'd paid everything that she should have paid. And then, of course, it turned out that she hadn't paid everything that she should have paid. So I think she's in a difficult place. And I think there's a lot of other people who've burnt up a bit of political capital defending her as well, which I think is going to be difficult, down the line potentially. Look, let's wait and see what Laurie Goring says, or no, sorry, Laurie, whatever his name is, Marcus. Sorry, I've got a friend called Laurie Goring.
I thought you said Lloyd Grossman, but yeah.
No, I don't want to know what Lloyd Grossman thinks about anything.
He'll probably tell us.
Through the keyhole or otherwise.
Yeah.
Apparently, he is quite likely to come up with his view today. So, I think we're probably in a good position for hearing about this pretty soon. And then it will come down to what Keir Starmer decides to do, whether he wants to relieve her of being the Deputy Prime Minister, as well as relieving her of being the, having the responsibility for housing and planning
I think
and
that's
local.
quite a shrewd idea of yours, Leonie, in terms of what Graham is saying about the Court of Public Opinion.
Yeah, because I mean, I think keeping her on as the Deputy Prime Minister, but maybe she has a break from housing, planning, and local government, and all of those things, gives her either a smaller brief. I mean, it's hard to imagine her in on the back benches, I have to say. Because she is one of the government's best performers. I think the other reason why people have gone after her so much, apart from the fact that she's a bit of a larger-than-life character, she's incredibly personable. I don't know if either of you have ever met her, but she is also incredibly...
Sort of latter-day Gracie Fields, almost. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she is also very tall.
Yes.
So she's literally a larger than
that
life.
That really rubs her the wrong way, doesn't it? Yes. Yeah.
I think I've got some photographs of me with her that in the end were sadly completely unusable because I think I only came up to her waist. I am slightly exaggerating.
I've had the reverse situation when meeting various of my partners, to be very gracious about it. We stand up, having sat down over dinner, and, you know, they need a telescope. I need a telescope. Yeah, yeah.
But, no, I mean, I really hope that a means by which Angela can be kept, because I think she's an incredibly effective performer. But as I was going to say, one of the reasons why I think she has, you know, had people sort of really going for her is because she did play a bit of a sleaze buster role before Tories were in, and she was one of the people who had quite a lot to say about, you know, their crimes and misdemeanors, which of course dwarf hers, as you were sort of touching on. I mean,
it's so important to remember that. Yeah,
you know, all of them, and setting up that sort of channel so that people could enrich themselves from PPE and setting up bogus companies and all the rest of it. I mean, actually, one of the donors to the Tory party was the partner of the woman who's now become Baroness Moan.
Michelle Moan.
Michelle Moan.
Yes,
and
yes.
He made squillions through the PPE contracts and was then able to make massive donations to the Tory party, which is a nice sort of circular.
So that's all right then. Yep. Yes.
While we're in the government, we'll give money to you, and then you can give it back to us to the party. Yes.
Following the Thames Water fraud as well.
Well, that's a different level of cash, I think.
That's like the big the black hole. It's 22 billion or something. They're in debt.
Well, what? Isn't it? While this Rainier thing plays out, some of them must be breathing a sigh of relief. It does give them respite, doesn't it? But unfortunately, it's at some human political cost. Two ways we could go with this. There's in terms of major infrastructure projects, there's a Singaporean bid to expand Heathrow to runway 6. There's also a promising-looking order of modular homes, which are going on a national tour, which won't fall down in a stiff breeze, allegedly, despite the presence of tabloid wolves. The first lot is going up in Havering. They seem to be quite ingeniously designed. Down in Catford, near my current beat of a day job, some of the post-war prefabs are still in operation, I see.
Yeah, very good.
Is this good design, Graham?
Yeah, that's the place to start, is the prefabs, which still occupied in many cases. So, I mean, the new one looks like a container, adapted container.
But they're quite popular, aren't they, on the continent now? Rotterdam, places like that.
There's an architect using containers to build buildings.
Mm.
He's built some quite big ones. So, how they perform thermally is a different question.
Mm.
I think it's a fantastic guy. I mean, as a student back in the 60s, I designed a modular housing unit that could be mass produced and spread out, you know, like cars. You know, I mean, the whole idea then was to turn housing production into a similar operation to car manufacture.
So it's a wonderful,
I mean, you can put them on wheels as well. I mean, it's
wonderful idea. What do you think of what happened? I mean, I remember when Basingstoke was going up when I was a young pup, and people thought in the Western Shires it was the death of civilization as we know it because of the little boxes all made of ticky-tacky, as the old Pete Seeger song goes, spreading up hillsides. Having said that, as a town, it's been thriving since, the construction has held. But is there a way, is this sort of design sufficiently, shall we say, humanistic? Does it need nooks and crannies? Or am I just being sentimental?
Well, exactly. It's all in the design. I mean, you need good architects.
Of which you are one.
Thank you.
Little boxes without boxes.
I remember that.
All
yes.
made out of ticky tacky, and they all look just the same.
The cutting edge of wrap. I've forgotten the letter. Beautifully done, Leonie. Thank you.
Little boxes without topsies, all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Have you got your fur coat and your chains in the henchman as you're singing that? Don't you? No, surely not. Surely not.
Now we're going back to
Crucial.
Under the Rain.
Yeah,
now we're going back to Under the Rain. All the photographs of her, she's got giant chains on.
Yeah, I'm flying. Yeah, well it's a fashion trend you don't need to say, but yeah.
The designer, Heatherwick, is running a program on Radio 4. About boring buildings at the moment, making some similar points. But it is down to design. So of course it could be made interesting, and modular units can be made interesting.
Customize them a bit, hopefully, if you have the freedom to do that. Leonie, this is presumably something that crossed your desk or that your colleague's desk on the GLA. Do you think it's going to fly? Are you happy with the results so far? Because it's one of the Khan's difficulties at the moment is his allegedly underperforming housing targets.
Well, it is one of the problems, actually, that doesn't get talked about probably enough, is coming back to Angela Rayner and the sort of national level, talking about building, 1.5 million houses nationally because we're having a housing crisis. One of the issues is about, where are the people that are going to build them? Because we're actually a bit short of
such an important point you make there.
Name a building trade, and we're probably short of anyone that you name. So we haven't got enough sparkies, brickies, plumbers, all the rest of it. So we're in a pretty dire situation. So that's one area where we've got a real skills shortage. So that is causing problems. Secondly, we've had this whole thing with the second staircase requirement that was introduced subsequent to Grenfell, and obviously a lot of what's being put up in London now is has been power blocks.
So stacking things is where you're going to have the potential difficulties. Yeah,
but one of my colleagues who's actually recently passed away, Nikki Gavron.
Oh, R.I.P.
Yes, and who was very involved in planning, was the chair of the Planning Committee on the GLA. Sorry, I don't know whether you can hear my cat in the background. She's making an absolute racket for some reason. Can you hear her?
Well, most mellifluously, our guard cat up at Bromley is Mr. Sparks. I call him Reginald Maudling, but he sends reciprocal mewing.
But Nikki did a we can do individual reports called rapporteurships. And Nikki did one on modern methods of construction, MMC, and modular buildings. And I went out while she was doing some of the site visits with her to go and visit some of these schemes. And underneath they might be a box, but that can then be stacked. There's a Barclay scheme in Kidbrook that's actually got very good environmental arrangements as well. It's about 40% nature, 60% housing. It's a really nice
scheme. Take a gander at that.
They used modular construction, and there were a couple of housing associations who were working on lots of schemes in London and nationally, who then set up their own factories to try and produce these modular buildings, but they've actually mostly then had to close them more recently because during COVID, obviously, construction waned rather a lot. Now, whether they're going to, some people,
a lot of going on off the books. I remember looking after some of those gentlemen, they had a rather hard time. Yeah,
but I have visited quite a few that are really very nice. There's one in Lewisham that's very colourful, that they were saying would be a really good way for, I think they put homeless families into it because they managed to construct. But I mean, if you're talking
that's great news.
If you're talking about the difference between an 8 months construction programme for a sort of traditionally built house and an 8 week construction programme for, something that's been built in a factory and then can be slotted together on site, you can kind of see why people would want to go down this route. But just as it was about, you know, all kicking off between 2016 and 2020, and then we went into the COVID time, and we haven't kind of ever really gone back to, you know, people shut their factories, and it sort of was just about to take off, and then it didn't.
But it has remained relatively affordable, and that's interesting. You know, it's been an iron in the fire for some time that could now is now being actioned.
No, I mean there's lots to commend it.
I suppose the way of the world is that sometimes, you know, they as would say people doing property guarding properties that are waiting recommissioning legalities to run through. Very often, this process can take years rather than months. So the temporary structures may well be, like temporary housing in general, can very often be semi-permanent.
Which is why you need good thermal comfort, as Graham was saying. They need to you must be able to, you know, live in them properly. Yeah. You can't have people moving in and then really struggling with, you know, not being able to heat them and things like that. They've got to be properly insulated and things.
And presumably Nikki Groveman would have been aware of that aspect when she was putting this together, this general idea.
Well, when I went round the half constructed ones in Kidbrook, you know, these were all the questions that we put to Barclay, who was the building company who's building them. And yeah, you know, all of those have definitely been taken into consideration for sure. Yeah.
Well, a mighty wind doth blow through Kidbrook, but they will be well insulated from it.
But as the court says, the word of the seller is not enough. You don't need
there is that. There is that.
The developer's word. You need an architect. That's what the architect's role is supposed to be, to give independent advice.
And I suppose you could say that the architect becomes more of a technical consultant on site. You know, the geophys and so forth, and the surrounding environment would come into play. The infrastructure beneath, because if the thing is modular in base, does that mean that the architectural role is, I won't say de-skilled, but downgraded a little bit, or is it recast?
That's the story of the last 40 years. Is the
There's
been. So it's the developer that's just taken over all the
power. Sort of paint me a Rothko, isn't it? Some of these things, they're all a little bit generic or, you know, adapted. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because they're mass producing the elements of the building.
Yeah.
So the architect is reduced to choosing from a kit of parts rather than designing a building from scratch. And because, again, for cost constraints and so on, and it is a long-term program. That's why you need, I think, Farrell of Farrell and Grimshaw, you know, he identified 700 sites around London where he could build houses. But I don't think he's been listened to. I don't know whether Angela Rayner listens to architects, but she should get a good one. You know, I mean, PTE, I used to work with a firm called Pollard Thomas and Edwards, PTE, and they turned out a building a day, you know, on average. Most of them were conversions of Georgian housing and so on.
Was that a happy arrangement? Were you broadly in sync with the way they were doing things?
Absolutely. That was the story of when we did a solar energy street, Carroll Street in Camden.
Yeah.
And it got cancelled from the fossil industry.
Yeah.
Because it was using fossil fuels.
I spent about 3.5 years as a property guard in the old Streatham police station, which inexplicably to me is still empty and currently unoccupied. It's a vast structure. I mean, somebody had to live in the custody suite, which was interesting. But the way these things can be adapted on a temporary basis makes them relatively livable. It's quite a congenial arrangement.
Were you living in the custody suite then?
Yes, Bates White's Gov, yes. Yep.
Well, that's the best set of excuses for being banged up in a police station that I've ever heard, Your Honour.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it was an honorary position, you see, I suppose, but yeah.
Graham, I had no idea that you were anything to do with Carroll Street. I used to live on Camden Road, round the corner from Carroll Street. I used to know virtually everybody who lived down there.
When it was redeveloped?
No, this was when it was not redeveloped. This was when it was the original Carroll Street Housing Cooperative. And
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the days of, early Livingston.
Some of the, well, of course, he used to be a Camden councillor at one point, actually. So, Spritty Politti used to live in Carroll Street.
Really? I know their former drummer quite well, Tom Morley's extraordinary man.
Okay.
Small world, yes,
No, with Arup, Ove Arup and Partners, very respectable, the most respectable engineering firm, that designing the solar energy applications. And it was cancelled, yeah. The solar energy bit was cancelled. It was on site when it was cancelled. The solar energy components were taken out of the building. I mean, so it's extraordinary, yeah.
Do you suspect a bit of jiggery pokery there, as Derek Connolly would say?
Well, it's decision making. I mean, it's decisions made for the benefit of the fossil industry.
Yeah, which is presumably one of those forks in the road moment when you thought, okay, this I'm in for the long haul now. This is a role that used to be righted. Yeah,
retro today. Little boxes.
I've got a cheesecloth shirt somewhere, Mrs. Trellis, haven't it? Yeah, so she's using it for other purposes now, which we will not elaborate on.
Jiggery pokery.
Yes.
Where are we going?
Derek Arler's washboard. That's where she's using it. And so to bang up to date, or at least to the tune of 2035, there are two proposals on the way. The latest one is private enterprise. And it's for runway 6 of Heathrow, which presumably is going to provide all of us in Southwest London with the requisite degree of din.
Don't we need to build 3 and 4 and 5 before we build runway 6?
Yeah, I've lost count, to be quite honest.
I mean, well, we've only got 2 at the moment. I'm still against runway 3. I don't know what to say about runway 6.
They're thinking ahead, presumably, or perhaps I am in a rare fit of the jitters. During lockdown, there was all this talk of air travel being constrained, commuted, because of the fact that eco-fueling was not yet on stream or sufficiently propulsive or efficient, and the fact that the public taste would drift away from it because we were all online. That's melted away now, hasn't it? Certainly on the Gatwick Express in my neck of the woods.
Yes, everyone's gone back to going on holiday as well.
Shame on them. Ban this filth.
the idea of
I've done nothing but staycations during this August. I've been a very morally good person.
I'm so pleased to hear it. And but seriously, there's a work life balance,
somewhere.
Isn't there?
Flying somewhere next month instead. The irony is that, of course, if you talk to half of the members of parliament, an awful lot of them have to fly backwards and forwards between their constituencies in and parliament, because otherwise it would take them a month of Sundays.
Notwithstanding the nationalisation of the railways,
yes. And, Fleur locally in Putney is now a Northern Ireland minister, so of course has to fly backwards and forwards to Belfast all the time. So
handy for the beach, isn't it? Yes. I hadn't realised that. It'd be very interesting to talk to her about that brief one of these days. Hopefully you met her once or twice since.
Yeah, but the implementation of the new technology to take the carbon out of the atmosphere is far more important.
It is. Now, is that going to, indeed. So that will leaven the mix, you would say, in terms of the expansion of the airport and the traffic that will come with it.
Well, we haven't got much time, so it's very important to get the right route. You know, we've only got 3 minutes or so before the point of no return. So, everyone's going blind into extinction.
Yeah.
Because it's unsustainable is often what is said, isn't it, about things like this that have worked reasonably well in the past, that they've been superseded by the need for exponential growth.
Yeah, they're listening to the arguments of the fossil industry. That's the point.
And the other thing is build it and they will come, I suppose. But I really question whether we need something of this size, although I gather it's not going to disrupt the M25 and that. There will be other design points that facilitate its validity. But is there, I mean, again, thinking of Zach Polanski, would he be able to make a credible argument for curtailing air travel? But I mean, I take Leone's point, the fact that if you're doing serious business, you need to be on site and quite rapidly.
Well, let me clarify. I am completely with Zach is completely against it, expansion. Mm. I'm completely against expansion of Heathrow. Mm. When in the autumn, we're going to bring, I've already made it clear to the other members of the Environment Committee that I want Heathrow to come back in front of us. And I want them to come and talk to us about their expansion plan. So we've already got letters have gone to them, and feelers have gone out to say which one of our meetings in October or November can you make. So you know, the London Assembly will be doing its it's best to look at through the Environment Committee. Mm. We'll look at air quality. Yeah. Impacts. We'll look at noise, particularly because mm. you know, a massive increase in planes is a huge increase in noise.
If you'd have been Putney or Well Hill areas like that, you've become inured to this, really, haven't you? Yeah.
And also the impact on our climate targets. You know, mm. we are supposed to be trying to achieve net zero, mm. and expanding Heathrow will not help us in that direction at all. I mean, what is the point of the Mayor of London cleaning up London's leg with ULEZ only to expand Heathrow so that they can disperse crap from aircraft all over us? And of course, at the moment, the road connections to Heathrow are terrible. Yeah. So, you know, it would all be mostly people driving to Heathrow because, you know, the trains are really not good. You can barely get to Heathrow from southwest London. I can get to Gatwick more easily than I can get to Heathrow on public.
There's that long, long bus route from Croydonia. Indeed, yes, yeah.
You know, no, but I mean, if you go to Croydon East Station, there's a mm. train there to Gatwick that gets you to Gatwick in about 20 minutes.
It does, and it's very well used, but also it is, even though it's Southern Railway, it's pretty efficient. It's also in the Oyster system, isn't it? So you can just ping down there and you're within sort of extreme zonage.
Yeah, you have to say probably for the last bit at the end, but yeah, it's just outside zone seats. But yeah, so I mean, Heathrow hasn't got any of that. It needs a train connection. So the Transport mm. Committee would also be looking at, you know, how to make Heathrow more connected as well. But
now, how
we don't want to expand. It doesn't benefit Londoners. Doesn't benefit.
What are the political? What are the sort of legal requirements for a big project like this to show its hand, so to speak, Graham? I mean, for example, I would wish it were the case. I think we all would, that presumably the London Assembly can't compel Heathrow to present itself.
Well, it goes back to the democratic process invented in Delphi.
Yes, yeah. Which we no doubt we should bring back, I think. I've been thinking about that these past few weeks.
Thing that Delphi was the democratic process. They invented democracy in Delphi.
Yeah.
And it was the process of getting the public information into the decision-making process. It's extraordinary when you actually look into the process of the Oracle, which I hadn't done until I went there.
Mm.
We really took a wrong turn in history because we lost the contact with the real environment. Because, of course, they made the decision after drinking water. The Oracle simply made some sounds, which were then interpreted by a committee of priests who issued the Oracle.
As the chair of the Environment Committee, I like the sound of me being able to interpret sounds in whatever way I fancy.
Would these be the postprandial emissions of Lord Hailsham, perhaps?
I do wonder what was in the water.
It's all about interpretation. But it's all about being in contact with the environment as well. That's why it's necessary. That's why the politicians are at a disadvantage, because they haven't got time or access to all the expertise. But that's why they have to rely on the experts to go away and do all the work and research and come up with a good solution.
I mean,
Well, that's not quite true of the Assembly. Our job is scrutiny, and we have a lot of time, and we put a lot of work into getting on top of all of the detail. The papers for the September Environment Committee had just come to me to look through as the chair. I went through them yesterday afternoon, 158 pages. We're not, you know, we're not lightweight.
Sterling work, Leonie, yeah.
We're not lightweight. Listen, guys, I've got to go, so it's been great talking to you.
Well,
take care. Take
thank
care.
You. Thank you both very much. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Are we carrying on or?
Is it okay if we pause for now, Graham? Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
See you next time. Thanks.
Bye.